and welcome to Connectivity 231. I'm your host, Nicholas Bray, and today I'm joined by Andrew Brown.
G'day.
And Zachary Miller.
Howdy.
And today we're going to be talking about the Senran Kagura games.
Kagura.
I've heard both.
Maybe not a lot of people really have delved into looking at these games or like finding out like a bit about them and stuff. So I thought it'd be a good idea to like have a good like in-depth look at some of the games and what people like about them, what they don't like about them, and who better than to get the two biggest fans probably on the NWR staff, Zach and Andrew. So I guess we'll kick things off by going all the way back to like the first game or the first time you guys picked one up and gave it a go. What was that game and what did you think about it?
Right.
I believe Andrew reviewed the first game.
I did, technically. So essentially what the series is, at least the main line in the games in the series, it's sort of like a Double Dragon style side-scrolling beat-em-up type game. The first game in the series was actually released in Japan only, 2011, I think. I think it was called Senran Kagura Skirting Shadows, and it involved there's these five students that go to a high school slash ninja
academy.
School. Yeah, they're pretty much high school age, but it's like a school for ninjas. And it talks about their lives as they go through their training regime and their, like, is it their finals during the events of the game?
I don't know, actually. It's been a long time since I played the first game.
Yeah. Essentially, it's called the, what is it? The
Hebijo.
Hebijo? Is that the good guys?
Hebijo Academy. Yep.
That's right. Yeah, the Hebijo girls, and They find these girls from an evil rival school of ninja girls.
Right.
And it goes through the stories of like how they interact and how they feel about meeting girls from other schools and coming to reality with the what it means to have to fight these other girls and possibly making friends with people that you're going to have to kill and things like that.
Oh, also, sorry, I'm an idiot. It's the bad guy's school is Hebijo.
That's what I thought.
The good guy's school. Good guy's school is, hold on a second, Hanzo.
Yeah, Hanzo National Academy and the Hebijo clandestine something or other.
Girls Academy.
Yeah. There we go.
There's too many names in this series.
But yeah, after the success of the first game, like, they showed the initial Japanese trailers, and I'm like, damn, I'm gonna play that. It's anime girls, it's boobies. I'm gonna be all over that. And then, it wasn't gonna be announced for, English translation until they made, like, a 1.5 version of the game. That's the one I got to review, which was, Senran Kagura, Burst. Yes. Burst.
Which is, I believe it's a compilation of the first two games in Japan, which were released, I want to say, a year apart.
Yeah, so it contained the entire story of the first game, and then it had an additional story mode where you play as the Hebijo evil girls, and it had connecting storylines that interweave, and then they had their own little missions and different plots that would revolve around the two different schools, and then it would all, like, combined together by the end of the game. So you got your chance of playing both the good girls and the evil girls and learning their different skills and their different personalities and everything like that.
So was the first game, did the series like start with the 3DS or was it on the DS, normal DS?
The 3DS.
Okay.
I think
3DS. According to legend, the series producer, whose name I don't remember, said that he thought for 5 minutes about what game to develop on the 3DS, and he figured people would want to see 3D animated boobs.
I don't doubt that. It wasn't long after the announcement of the 3DS that they had that initial trailer, and it focused just on boobs bouncing on the screen in stereoscopic 3D.
What can I use this 3D for?
I could not believe it was localized. That was a huge shock to me.
Mm. So When people see the trailers, that's pretty much all they focus on. That's what they play it up as. That's generally what it is. But it goes beyond that. There's a couple of layers into the game there beyond just the blatant fan service.
See, and that's why I wanted to talk a bit about it today, because that's generally what you see on, like, the generalized internet and, like, sort of vague opinions from people that probably haven't, you know, touched the games and stuff. That's generally what you see thrown around. So yeah, let's get into some of the more, like, specifics about, you know, aside, once you get past the fan service and the general, like, look of the games and stuff, what is there underneath here?
Well, there's a lot of... the thing I think is the game's strongest suit, more so than even the gameplay, is the writing and the localization. Every one of the... At this point, there's like 36, maybe 40 girls, has a very clearly defined personality and interests and motivations, and there's I don't want to say a large, but a big part of the games is kind of a visual novel aspect where you're reading one girl's storyline or the storyline of that school, and it's effective. I mean, it's a really good, surprisingly well done story.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I mean, from the get go, like the first time you meet each of the characters, they seem to be the clearly defined, like, for lack of a better term, waifu tropes. You see each of the different characters, each of the different characters and their own personalities and everything like that. And it's like, okay, so that one's the bookish one. That one's the tsundere one. That's like, she pretends to be like, super stuck up and violent, whereas like she's just hiding her emotions. There's the one that looks like a little kid that's pissed off at everyone for treating her as such. There's the ditzy cutesy one that loves animals, so forth. And it's like, you can clearly see these are all anime tropes on every single character. But then when you delve into the story and you start learning how they play off each other and how the story develops and how they react to certain scenarios, especially towards the end of each of the games where it starts getting really violent and, it gets quite dark in the stories.
Some morality comes up.
Yeah. There's quite a bit of personal sacrifices that each of them have to make, and coming to terms with how far they're willing to go to complete their missions and to essentially get passing grades from their like ninja leader teachers that they have in each of the schools, and what they're willing to do to essentially survive. And there's often quite scenarios and situations where. It's a really a matter of life or death. It is a ninja story, after all. And it's finding out how some of these girls react or the motivations behind them, their individual pasts, and what put them into the positions they're in to be able to study at this school and learn what they do. It's you learn quite a lot about each of the scenarios, and they're really not as shallow as initially appearing.
No. And then, luckily, I don't know if Burst had this. Maybe Burst did. Did Burst have, like, little bonus missions for individual girls?
I think it did. Like, every three or four missions, there would be, like, the overall story going ahead. And then there would be one mission that focuses on one particular character. And, like, it's like,
yeah, that's right.
I'm going to go buy ramen for lunch. And it's like,
So there's some lightness. I mean, it's not all dark and depressing story. There's a lot of, this is kind of funny stuff to balance it out.
Yeah.
As you'd expect, kind of just, you know, from the general pictures and stuff you see, like, it is also tongue-in-cheek in a lot of ways, I assume. Like,
oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Then there was I think the next game in the series was Estival Versus that was originally on the Vita.
Shinobi.
Oh, really?
Yeah, on the Vita. Yep, it was, let me see, when it came out here, 2014. And it is similar. It introduces two new schools. I'm not going to look at what they're called right now.
Gessen Girls Academy, and what's this one?
Actually, it's Hibijo. The five new girls take over Hibijo because the Homura's group goes off on their own. So it's actually just one new school.
And
The bad guys from the first game just kind of go off and become a rogue group. But anyway, Shinobi Versus is more of a 3D. It's more of a Musou game where you're just fighting wave after wave of enemies, and then you fight a boss, and the boss is always another girl from a rival school.
So is this like a spin-off, or is this like the next like mainline game? Like,
I think it ties into the overall story.
It's hard to tell.
Because, from game to game, does the gameplay style change? Or, they explore various different types of gameplay? Is that like a thing for the series?
They're all beat-em-ups. Yeah. The difference is the perspective. Mm. The first game is kind of always from the side. Yeah. The Vita games are always 3D. You can move the camera wherever, and there's a lot of platforming. And the sequel is
sort of a mix of both.
Yeah, sort of a mix of both with a fixed camera that doesn't always work. So the Vita games, they do take place within the same continuity as the 3DS games, but they're very obviously side stories.
Ah, mm-hmm. Okay. I never played the Shinobi or Estival Versus games.
Okay. Well, aside from introducing the new characters, they don't do a lot to move the story forward. The story, you know, supposedly is these girls are training to fight Japanese demons, Yoma.
Yep.
And that's in the first game, they don't fight any except the final boss. It just kind of comes out of nowhere. But the second game is all about fighting Yoma.
Yeah. Moving forward with that one, Samurai Kagura 2 Deep Crimson, I think it starts off immediately after the first game, leads into a little bit of the Shinobi Versus. Essentially, the first chapter of the game would be like a recap of the final moments of the first game. And then it goes into like a bit of the backstory of why the Hibijo girls broke off from their school. They quit their school. They lived in a cave for a while. I don't know if that's still a thing.
Yep.
And then they started training for themselves to become strong for their own purposes in life. Whereas the school that they came from started to employ evil people, like even more evil than they purported to be.
Right. Genuinely evil people.
Then it introduces into the Yoma, and they go start traveling Japan and fighting demons. Like the Hanzo girls go on like a field trip to Kyoto, where all the temples and shrines are. And they start meeting these demons, and it develops into like where are these demons coming from, and how do we stop them, and going forward from that. And then there's a bunch of spin-off games,
Deep Crimson also introduces a girl whose name is actually Kagura, who was born and raised only to fight demons.
Oh, yeah.
But then she, after the demonic invasion is quelled, she dies? It's not really clear what happens, but she's reborn next time there's a demonic invasion. So it introduces her, and what's weird is that she has nothing to do with the Vita game. She is in them as DLC, but that's all.
Huh. I think we should take a step back here and talk about, like, what makes these games unique. I mean, it is beat-em-up, it is ninjas, but essentially what the selling point of the game, especially in Japan, is that each of the characters, as you're fighting and playing through the levels, they have their health bar, they have their attack bar of, like, they build up power and they can unleash special moves and things like that. But the characters also have a clothing health bar this series. And so if they take enough damage, their clothes get more and more shredded and ripped until eventually they'll fly right off and the girls will be in their unmentionables. And at that point, what is it? They can do their best ninja moves, but they take more damage. Generally,
that is an optional mode when you start a mission. you can go into frantic mode, which like zeroes your defense, but you're only in a bikini or something, so your attack goes way up. But during normal play, if your clothing gets shredded, your defense just takes a big drop.
That's right, and then you can transform into like the ninja or the shinobi version of your character.
Right.
Each character has two uniforms.
The superhero costume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't actually unleash any special moves unless you're in that shinobi outfit for yourself. So until then, it's just building up your power and fighting the way you do until it's like time to get serious.
Right.
Yeah.
And your health regenerates when you hit that transformation, which is nice.
Yeah. So even though it is fan service, there's sort of a strategy towards using it. It's like, okay, it's time to get naked, got to beat this boss, or whatever it is that you're doing in the mission.
Yeah.
So do you, like, choose your character at the start of each level, or do you have to, like, manage a team, or is it just sort of chosen for you, or how does that work?
It's chosen for you the first time you do a mission.
Oh, okay.
But then you can replay any mission with any character that you've played as already.
Mm. Yeah, and it's got some RPG elements to it. Each character has their own set of experience that you can level up and build up their abilities and ultimately unlock new attacks and new outfits for yourself and everything like that. And so if you prioritize like replaying old missions with one character, you're going to be screwed by the end of the game because you need to make sure you level up everyone evenly as evenly as you can.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm.
And also they've improved on it over the games and they've emphasized it more. You can customize your character's outfit, like all three of their outfits. You're constantly unlocking new clothing options, and there's a big, I don't spend too much time on it, but there's a big customization option, and they'll look like that in cinema scenes. And
it seems to get bigger in each game with that, the amount of options. The three outfits, essentially, that's, you can pick their, what is essentially their schoolgirl uniform, which is their normal clothing, their shinobi uniform, which is the superhero outfit, and usually their bikini as well, or their underwear, or lack thereof.
Mm. Yeah, and what's interesting, I just found out this, there's the Steam version of Bon Appetit, which is a rhythm game we might talk about later, has like even more clothing options than the Vita version.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're really emphasizing it, and I think they're really going to emphasize it in Peach Beach, too.
Is that the new Switch one that's coming, or is that a different game?
This, Peach Beach, is an upcoming PS4 game. It's kind of their answer to Splatoon.
Oh, it looks very much like Splatoon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. With water guns instead of paint guns.
Yeah, there's been a ton of spin-offs, and this series is only like, what is it now, 6-7 years old all up, including the Japanese games that originally came out?
I think so, yeah.
And
there's been a couple mobile games over there.
And it's just absolutely exploded. There was an anime series.
Oh, was there? I didn't know that.
There was it.
I'm not surprised.
It recaps the original game. I think it goes a bit into bursts, Deep Crimson.
Okay. I might look that up.
It's got the same...
And then...
Go on.
Bon Appetit came out on Vita and Steam, and it's a rhythm game that is really hard.
I haven't played it. I've seen a trailer of them making cakes. And how does the ninja theme play into that? Do they, like, battle for the food?
It really doesn't. They're both... You're in a kind of a bake-off with another girl to try and see who makes the best dish, which just means how accurate can you be with your rhythm button press tapping.
Right. So it's
not great, but I'm close to a platinum, so I'm just going to finish it.
So yeah, there was that. There was the Vita games and the PS3 and PS4 games, the Musou style games. Peach.
I don't think it came to PS3, did it?
Wasn't Estival Versus on PS3 as well as Vita?
Oh, could be. I know it was on PS4.
Huh.
I don't know, actually.
They seem to love re-releasing the games.
It would not tax the PS3.
Mm.
But yeah, there's really only four main games in the series, and then there's all these, the mobile and the Vita spin-offs.
Yeah. So have you guys played all the main ones then, basically?
Which is essentially 1 and 2 on the 3DS, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Hmm. Yeah, and I've played all the other ones because I have a problem.
How many figurines do you
have? I have my little Senran Shrine. I only have Katsurugi because you'd be surprised. You'd think that with a cast like this, the figure market would be skyrocketing, but there are very few quality figures. There's another one coming up of Yumi soon. She's the Ice Princess. And really thinking about getting that one. But I want to see photos of the released version.
I've seen
Got to hold out for the Amiibo versions.
Yes. That would be interesting.
I think there's been like at least two or three figure lines from different manufacturers based on the majority of the mainline series games. I think
I'm sure
it was this plays into the whole style of the games. It was like an unprecedented new manufacturing of figurines in Japan. It was officially created for this game, but they introduced a new type of resin that would allow figurines to have actual soft, squishable boobs.
Right.
Which they did for...
that is correct.
Asuka and Homura, the two main characters from the good and bad schools in the first two games. And I believe the photos they had for the original announcement line had them, like, squishing SD cards between their boobs or holding pencils and things like that.
Awesome.
It was great.
That sounds so dumb, but so good.
It matches with the style of the games completely. You just take it completely ridiculously over the top with the fan service.
I said earlier they get naked if they take enough damage in the latest games, but that's not totally true because in Senran, in Deep Crimson, their unmentionables are hidden by chibi faces of themselves. And in the Vita games, they're just bright yellow lights.
Hmm. So TV network censorship style.
Right.
Hmm. Well, yeah, yeah, I like the chibi faces.
They're pretty funny.
I didn't see them going all the way with that stuff. I mean, their games would not be coming out then, would they?
No.
Probably not.
So
Deep Crimson, actually, some DLC. There was a good amount of DLC for Deep Crimson, and one of the DLC options was to mess around with their cup sizes, which looks really weird when you do it.
Mm. I think one of the DLC storylines was about there's one girl, Mirai. That's the one who everyone treats like a kid. She's naturally short, naturally wireframe, and everything like that. She's completely obsessed with being as buxom as the other girls. As you do, it's Japan. It's anime.
Right.
And there's an entire storyline around her finding a spell that allows her to increase her cup size by... does she steal it from the other girls? I think...
No, she doesn't realize that when she increases hers, it increases everyone else's too.
All right.
So by the end of that story, it's you're basically basketballs, people attached to them. It looks so stupid.
And did you get the Murasame, the male character?
I did, yeah. You get him for having save data from the first game and through a really weirdly complicated process.
Hmm.
He doesn't just unlock if you have save data. You have to do some stuff. At least over here you do.
Yeah, you had to enter into the game and go into a special menu and choose to download something else. I don't remember how it goes. But everyone had difficulty. I remember seeing forums of how do you get this guy unless you actually pay for him. But Yeah, the first male character in the series was in the technically the third game, which is listed as 2 in the continuity. He's essentially like the gag character. He's a complete klutz. He usually injures himself with the weapons that he uses.
I think he uses a ball and chain?
Is it? Yeah.
Something like that. There's a chain involved.
Yeah, it might be one of those, I forgot the name of them, the nunchuck things with the blade on the end.
Oh, that's probably right, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
Kusarigamas, I think they're called. There's also been other DLC characters. There's a lot of crossover with other game series at the moment. There's been a lot of, what was it, the Senran Kagura costumes appearing in...
Yeah, this in Dead or Alive 5.
Yeah.
And Ayane is in both of the Vita games. No, only Estival versus. But you can also get Kasumi's kimono outfit.
That's cool.
And then a bunch of Eco Tusen girls are in Estival Versus. I don't know what Eco Tusen is.
Eki Tosen? Possibly. Yeah. That's an anime series that's very similar in the visual stylings of this game series.
Okay. Mm. And actually, I think that might be it for crossovers in Estival. Oh, I'd have to turn on the game. But what annoys me about the guest characters is they don't transform. All their stats are set, so playing with them is kind of pointless.
Hmm. There's also one legendary character in each of the 2 main schools from the beginning of the story. I think their name's Daidoji, who's...
Oh, yeah.
She's, like, consistently... They consider her, like, the legendary dropout. Like, she keeps redoing the final year endlessly because she's obsessed with being the greatest, strongest character in the history of the school. So she doesn't let herself pass so that she can retake the final exams and essentially improve herself. So she is unbelievably strong, but has never actually graduated. Whereas you're the newbies in this school, you come up through the ranks of the classes and you graduate beyond her official recognized level. And then there's...
And her rival, Rin is the...
she the headmaster?
I believe that she's the headmaster of Hibijo before... And then after Hibijo collapses, she joins the Hanzo girls just because Daijoji is there and they're buddies.
Hmm.
So, like, mechanically, like, playing the beat-em-up parts of the game, like, are they hard? Are they, like, compared to other sort of games in the same genre, how do they stack up? Do you reckon, like, are they just as good or if not better than, like, some of the better beat-em-ups out there? Because, like, the beat-em-up genre as well is sort of, like, I don't know, people sort of a bit bored of them, too.
It's better than Double Dragon, but maybe not as deep as Warriors games?
Given that you can level up and you can improve your own abilities and HP and everything like that, really, it's as difficult as the amount of rushing that you intend to do. If you're willing to take the time and replay levels and build up your characters, then you're not going to have too much challenge.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the main challenge of the game is if you want to unlock everything.
Yeah.
If you're a completionist and you want to see the best stats for every character, I believe there's a few unlockable missions towards the end of the game, if you've maxed out the stats of all the girls, things like that.
Yeah.
So, the more you put into the game, the more you'll get out of it, generally. I remember I spent a couple of months...
Having said that, I will say that the Vita games especially are unbelievably repetitious.
Mm.
Just brutally repetitious. Whereas Deep Crimson is... probably the best from a gameplay perspective because you're actually fighting different kinds of mad guys and there's different environments that you go to and you really have to utilize the special attacks in a kind of strategic way. And there's two-player multiplayer, but there's also you can take 2 characters into every mission and swap between them.
Oh, okay. Hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's nice.
So, but, like, the main, like, because you guys spoke a fair bit about the story and the characters and stuff, you'd say that's probably, like, the main draw. Like, once you sort of get involved with the story, you know, it's that's sort of the thing you really want to see more of?
Generally, I would agree with that. Like, you want to see what happens in the story. You want to see where the battles between the various girls go, who survives through to the end. I mean, the spoilers, they usually all survive, but there are quite dramatic moments in the series where something's building up and then something unexpected happens or someone gets killed off, and it is genuinely shocking because you're not expecting it in what initially appears to be such a lighthearted game series.
Right.
Mm. So, I guess...
And the bosses are really, really cool in Deep Crimson.
Oh, that's cool.
The Yoma characters, yeah.
Yeah. They get perpetually more crazy.
I like how everything's still sort of set, even though it goes a bit crazy and a bit modern, it's all still set in traditional Japanese scenarios. All the Yoma characters are actual Japanese demons of folklore. There's the Oni girl, and there's I think there's Tengu flying demon girls and stuff like that. Even the abilities that the girls use and the skills that they have and everything like that all still ties in with essentially tropes of ninjutsu in Japan, but it all still has a grounding in actual history. I remember there was a series, I think it was Gaijin Gumba explained that there was a certain fact of ninja girls in Japan who would use their bodies as distractions in order to complete their assassinations. Yeah. And they're like, so essentially the series or the characters in the series aren't that unrealistic. It's just a modernized take on them. They're ninjas. They're still practicing the old arts, but they're in modern day times.
Yeah. That's cool.
So looking ahead to the Switch game, what do we know about that game? Like, is there anything really been revealed aside from that small pudding part in the direct?
That's what we know about the game, pudding.
Yep. I think he's hinted that it's going to go more towards the visual novel aspect of the series, right, but really don't have any real information.
Do you have any control over the story or like conversations in the games that have come out already?
Generally, no.
Okay, maybe they'll throw that in, like a bit of that sort of...
Maybe branching paths, depending
branching
on...
Branching paths and stuff, yeah.
Who you choose to save, or... Yeah, that'd be interesting. Just like with the original inspiration, seeing what the stereoscopic 3D can do, I'm pretty sure that the new game was immediately set upon on the Switch when he learned about the 3D Rumble. And that's...
Oh, yes.
That's mentioned explicitly in the little demo video that's been on the Japanese eShop. And to explain for those who don't understand, the pudding thing, he's actually researching jiggle physics in pudding and a Japanese flan and various food products like that. It's got him wobbling them and seeing how it feels and how to best incorporate that into the 3D Rumble.
So they can try and mimic what it feels like. Because when you wobble something, you can generally feel the slight thing on the plate or whatever. Maybe that's what they're going for.
So there's definitely going to be secondary motion felt in the Switch game.
Yeah.
Well, at least there's going to be one third party making use of that feature.
I mean, I wish more companies would... I guess there has been a fair few games that have used HD Rumble, but I really, really like it when they use it, like, noticeably, heavily. Like, some of the...
I use it for more than just general rumble.
It's fantastic in Shantae.
Oh, is it? I don't have it on Switch.
I was kind of disappointed.
I'll get it on Switch.
Mario Kart.
Oh, God.
I was like...
Oh, it's not?
It is, but it's not that, like, noticeable. Like, I think I was expecting, like, you're going to feel the different surfaces of the roads underneath the controller and stuff.
Cool.
But, yeah, it's nothing like that.
No, I haven't gotten that game either. I should, but I don't have it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Switch game. I just would like more information on what it's going to be.
Mm. Did they say when it's coming out? Was it next year or
just in development?
Ew. Yeah,
yeah. And I mean, there's not even a. I feel like there's never a promise that these games will come here. The mobile games did not.
Mm.
Haste.
And it's a minor miracle that Bon Appetit did.
It's a minor miracle that any of this game series got localized at all, considering the content.
God bless Marvelous.
At this point, though, like, surely the company that's been localizing them, like, for the 3DS and stuff would probably, you know, do the Switch game as well. I mean, why not? If there's a market for it, why wouldn't they bother?
Oh, yeah, and it's been the same team, actually, who's been localizing all these games, and I know that I've read a couple interviews with people on XSEED's localization team, and they really like the characters, and they know them inside and out now, and I think they should keep doing it.
Yeah.
I will say that the one big localization change, which is understandable when these games came to the West, is they're no longer high school girls. They're college age.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Understandable.
Yes.
I think...
Yes, it is.
I think Asuka, in particular, Asuka and Homura, they just don't tell their age in the game now.
I don't think any of them do. I think they just say, like, what year they are.
Like, you can even hear them, like, they do a little jiko shokai, a little self-introduction at the start of the second game, and she's like, I'm Asuka Juroksai desu. I'm 16. And,
really?
And the subtitles just skip past that and just throw something else in.
Oh, that's funny, but good. That's good that they do that.
So, there was also some comments made by the curator of this, or the guy at least making the games, like, in charge, saying that he was thinking about toning down some of the elements or something. Do you guys follow that bit of news?
For Western markets,
For Western markets only, is it? That's interesting, too, I guess.
It is. I doubt he will. I can't imagine any of these games sell well. They're very niche.
Mm.
And I think the people who buy them now know what they're getting.
Mm. There's no hiding
that. What do you
think,
Andrew?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as long as there's a market for the games, they're still going to be doing it. And the Japanese developers are going to be pushing for everything they can get away with. Granted, there is a lot of undressing females in these games. But there's nothing that's outwardly offensive in a way.
No.
I mean, I think the worst of it, I think it's your favorite character, Katsuragi Zek. She's a bit of a pervert, and she's quite clearly interested in the other female characters. She will grope them at every given opportunity, but it's never intended.
It's never shown.
Yeah, it's never actually shown.
She just talks about it.
There's talking about it, there's sound effects and things like that, like cartoony things. But it's all lighthearted. It's never intended to be like, oh, there's never any rape situations in the games. There's no demons, like, setting upon the young lasses like there would be in, say, anime series and things like that.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, those who choose to get antsy about this sort of thing, they're going to be mad at the games because of the way the characters dress to begin with, regardless of what happens in the content of the games.
Yeah.
Can you imagine this game releasing around, like, the Western video game climate of hot coffee? My God.
It probably would have passed by without any comment back in, like, 2005 or whatever it was. I mean, the climate today is much more heavily scrutinizing different things about games and stuff.
Yeah, I guess it is, yeah.
I think that's...
I don't know how I feel about it. I understand why he would tone it down for a Western release, but at the same time, I don't think the Western releases are high profile enough to warrant toning down.
I think there's a reason the series has remained on handhelds more than the mainline consoles.
Yeah, yeah.
Think about the what the goal is. Like, is the goal, if you're toning stuff down, what's like, is the point to try and bring in more people that, you know, might be put off by some of the more risque elements, or is it to you know, just not have any criticism thrown at you?
Yeah. Do they have criticism now?
Well,
I
have to assume that there is some. You don't really see that much about it because, like you say, the game is quite niche. Like, the series in general.
Yeah, I don't know. I should look into that. I just feel like these games... Like, I am probably... It's probably not true, but I feel like I'm the only guy in Alaska who knows this game exists. or this series exists. And whenever I go to PAX, I'll get like one street pass for Deep Crimson. And I think it's been the same guy the last 2 years. So, you know, I don't think it's a, it's not a well-regarded series for its content, which is kind of bullshit, but it's also not, it's not lighting up the charts.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know. I can see why you do it, but I can also see why doing it would be pointless.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's your waifu there, Andrew?
I like he.
Mine is not Katsurugi, but who's yours?
I like Hikage.
Okay. She's
no
knife girl.
No bullshit knife girl. She's tough. Coming out of her shell sort of storyline appeals to me. She's like, she keeps to herself. She's like, super violent, super cold, but then like by the end of the series, she realizes that she does value her friends and she doesn't know how to feel for herself. It gels with some things that I've gone through in my life, I guess.
Aw.
Hmm.
My current waifu is kind of a tie between Yumi and Shiki. Shiki because I really like Elvira.
Ah. So Yumi's the ice girl. Shiki is also from the same game?
Yes, Shiki is the girl with the scythe.
Okay.
And if you have not played the Vita games, then you don't know who she is. But she's dressed in basically, you know who Elvira is, right?
Yeah.
Okay, she's basically dressed in an Elvira costume, and she has a hat with giant bat wings, and she has a gigantic double-bladed scythe.
So she's sort of like monster-themed girl?
Yes, actually, that's probably true, because most of her special attacks involve her hat turning into a bunch of bats and attacking the enemies.
Hmm. So is she a vampire, or...?
No, she's just a valley girl.
Wow.
She grew up rich, and she likes to blog, and she can teleport herself by turning into a blood mist.
Right.
You know.
Chunibyo.
That's something you learn in, that's something you learn in school.
Hmm. I can see with her outfit, I'm Googling it now, I can see why that's a favorite.
Uh-huh. Mm. Uh-huh. Yeah. She needs a figure. She needs one real bad.
Okay. But, so, yeah.
Nick, I recommend at least... Do you have a Vita?
No. No.
Okay. Do you have a 3D... You have a 3DS.
Yeah.
I recommend Deep Crimson. If you want to try... If you want to get your feet wet on this series, Deep Crimson is probably the best of the 3DS games.
Mm-hmm. It does have much more content than the first game. It's always on sale on the eShop every couple of months.
God, that's true.
They're trying to spread the word.
Okay, well, that's a good recommendation if anyone's thinking of trying out the series.
Don't be ashamed.
Is there any closing thoughts before we wrap up here?
Yeah, it's...
Go ahead, Andrew.
It's one of those series that you know what you're getting into when you get into the game. If you like that sort of stuff, if you like anime characters, if you like beat-em-ups, if you like generally fun but mindless, like, platforming style... I suppose side-scrolling platforming, beating-em-up, there's a bit of shooting involved, things like that. Get into the game. There's no harm. You're not hurting anyone. Those reviewers who naysay the game are usually the ones that naysay it based on the content alone, just from the art style of the games and the opening cutscenes and things like that. If you actually play the game, you'll find there's quite a lot of depth and quite a lot of... The characters are all likable in their own way. There's no truly sexualized characters in the series, I would say.
That is bizarrely true. Mm. I kind of see this series a little bit like the Shantae series in that it's all cheesecake. The gameplay is not top tier, but the story and the writing keep you coming back. It's good, clean fun.
Except for when there's cooking and cream
involved.
Listen,
you could be you could be shooting prostitutes in Grand Theft Auto, or you could be, you know, slicing up
Ninja Girls,
robots, I guess, or Yoma.
Yep.
They fight for their friends.
I do think it's ridiculous that these girls all have incredibly dangerous weapons, and they are killing each other all the time, but nobody gets a scratch.
Just their clothes.
Just their clothes, that's right.
Ninja powers.
Yeah, I guess so. Just like Soul Calibur.
Alrighty then. So, yeah, thanks guys for coming on and chatting about the Senran series. It's been good talking to you guys again.
Yeah.
Yeah, you too, man. I'm glad we finally got to do this.
Yeah, yeah, after our, you know, we've been trying to do this for like 3 or 4 weeks now, I think. But we got there in the end, so yay.
Well, we'll have to do this again once the Switch game comes out.
Yeah,
we'll
see how the HD Rumble stacks up, I guess.
Perfect.
So, yeah, if anyone has any questions or comments for Connectivity, you can send them to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, or you could just throw it in the talkback thread to this episode, and we'll see it there. So, yeah, thanks again, everyone, for listening, and until next time, bye.
Bye.
Toodles.
Wikiette.